This oral history interview is being conducted by the Area 53 Archives Committee to pass on the history of our fellowship through the shared memories of one of our members. No duplication or reuse of this interview beyond sharing on platforms of the Area 53 Archives Committee is authorized without the express written consent of the member being interviewed in the Area 53 Archives Committee.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Stephen S., and I am a member of the Area 53 Archives Committee. And one of our major projects this year is to get oral histories from old-timers or long-timers, folks who have been around AA in this area, Central and Southeast Ohio. And in particular, amongst that, we're making sure that we get the folks who are around, who are past delegates. So we have a little bit of a oral history of to look back on that as well. So with us today is Bill S., but he is a past delegate from Panel 45, which was 1995 and 1996 conferences. You know, we're not going to be doing anything except asking him a few questions, and he's going to share his story. We'll get started. And how you doing, Bill?
I'm doing fine.
All right. Well, let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about what life was like before you found AA.
My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is December 16th, 1980. I appreciate Steve and the Area 53 Archives Committee for asking me to give this oral history. I'll do it just like I would normally do if I was leading. I don't know where we're going to go from here, but feel honored and privileged to be asked. So that means I'm older than dirt. To two non-alcoholic people who met on a troop ship coming back from World War II. They were both Army officers. Mom was a nurse. Dad was in intelligence. They came back to the United States, got married, and moved to Toledo, Ohio, where I grew up and went to high school there up and stayed there my whole life until I went off to college. My parents were upper middle class. I mentioned that they were non-alcoholic. I have two non-alcoholic sisters. I'm the only one in my immediate family, even though I have a long history of alcoholism in my ancestral family. My parents were involved in Boy Scouts and church, and I was too. I was captain of the safety patrol. I'm an Eagle Scout. I usually say trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, reverent, and alcoholic. And I'm sure Lord Baden-Powell is rolling over in his grave right now. I learned to drink socially, I think, because I'm not quite sure what that means because I never did it. But I used to watch my parents when they would come home from their day jobs and be late afternoon, dad would go to the liquor cabinet and get down a bottle of bourbon or scotch or whatever he had and fill up two tall, big highball glasses. And then he always used one of those ridiculous short little glasses with the two white lines on it and pour one each into the one glass and then another one into the other glass, and that's what they would, you know, talk to over their afternoon. I wanted to add that even though I wasn't drinking at that time, I remember that I thought that it was a ridiculous way to drink alcohol. And I never did do it that way, and I never intended at that age to drink that way either. I wanted to mention that I always could relate to our AA speakers that I would listen to in open meetings about how they felt about themselves at this time of their life. I was blessed with a artistic and talent and ability that kept me employed as an advertising art director for 35 years. And as an artist, I always felt that they expected me to be a little weird. And I tried real hard not to disappoint them. I was introverted at that time. I always felt terribly inadequate. I was socially very awkward. I had some good friends a couple, and I stayed with those good friends all through high school until we separated going to college. I was about 17 years old at this time that I started my 17-year career of drinking. I'm going to follow my notes that I received here. It's kind of a cheat sheet, and I've gone through the early part of it already. The next line is, how did you start drinking? Well, I started drinking at 17 years old. It was my senior year in high school. These were graduation parties. And I believe I went directly from my first drink into alcoholism. I do not remember my first drink or very many of them because I went directly into blackouts. And that was my pattern of drinking. And I thought that's how people drink. That's how it was. And so that's how I pretty much did it for the next 17 years of active alcoholism. And it says, say something about your bottom. I didn't reach this bottom until 17 years later. I was a walk-in to the Riverside drug and alcoholism meeting that they had on Tuesday nights at 8 o'clock, Riverside Tea Group. And I came there primarily to learn how not to get drunk and how not to get in trouble and how not to do those things that I never wanted to do, like being annoying and rude and loud and things along those lines. But I did that for almost 2 years. I didn't do anything other than that one meeting a week on Tuesday night. I saw no use to it. I enjoyed the meetings. I enjoyed the stories that everybody told. I enjoyed seeing the people there struggling with their alcoholism, but it really wasn't for me. It says, how did you hit bottom? Well, I hit bottom a few years after I came in. I was following a pretty severe hangover. I was late to work, as usual. I worked weird hours, so I always made up for any time I was late to work. And I don't think I ever did once get called for being late to work. But it was a real bad hangover, and I felt bad mid-afternoon. I went to my car. I was going to go and drink, and I didn't know what to do. So I made it to Central Office, and that was back when I was on East Broad Street at the time. It was the most fortunate thing in my life that I ever did. I went into the side door and sat down next to an older woman that was volunteering, who sat directly across from Donna S. And I proceeded to tell her my terribly, terribly sad story of my drinking. And her name was Thoris. And Thoris let me ramble on a little bit. And then she says, I have some questions for you. And when I answered the question, she did this sound effect that went every time I answered a question, and they went something like this. I wish I had them recorded. How many meetings are you going to a week? Oh, I'm going to one meeting a week, whether I need to or not. What's your sponsor say about it? And I went, I don't have a sponsor. I know that the people that attend these meetings need to have a sponsor, but I haven't seen the use for it yet. She says, have you read anything about it in the books? I go, no, I know that these people read their books, but this wasn't for me. The same old thing. So she snickered at me, and she said, you know, you're right on the verge of going out and getting drunk. And she explained a little bit to me what was going on and literally scared the hell out of me. She let me have it. She was not kind, and she was not cuddly and warm. She just let me have it. And it's exactly what I needed at that time, not even realizing it. I finished up there, called a friend of mine to come pick me up downtown at the office, and then proceeded to go to every single AA meeting that I could. That's pretty much how I started with my second bottom. It says working the steps. What happened was, is that when she let me have it, I didn't go back home. I didn't start doing those things that were all recommended to do. I didn't get one sponsor. I got two. I got a woman that was highly skilled in working the steps, and she conned me into working the steps, asking me to speak for the first time, and then informing me after I said, sure, I'll be glad to, that I had to have the steps worked in a matter of 2 months. So I always felt a little conned into that. I always thought that was a pretty good trick. My other sponsor was a man from the Poindexter group who was really, really good at spirituality and how to work the AA program, but he was not very well versed on how to work the steps and the traditions and things like that. So I had Gene to work the steps with and Charles for spiritual usage. It had a question in here about changing sponsors. Well, I've been sober for 41 years, and I'm only on my fourth sponsor, which I think is pretty good, actually. And the first three, Gene, Charles, and Bill I, both have all passed away and gone to the big meeting in the sky. Following Charles, I got Bill as a sponsor. Charles and Bill were both home group members at the time I asked them of the Poindexter group. And I think that's where I got my basic grounding in AA was going and listening very carefully to the leads at Poindexter and continuing to do that for a number of years. It says here, were there any conventions or events that were important in your early sobriety? And there was. There were basically two conventions going on in Columbus annually. The first one was a social convention called the Columbus Roundup. It was a social convention. And the second one was the Area 53 convention, which I'll talk about in a minute. But those were very important to me and got me, you know, and I told you that I was, you know, pretty introverted and socially not terribly graceful, and those helped me come out of that little cocoon that I was in. It says, do you think they were effective? And I go, yes, I do, very much so. There was another event that was an annual event held in November of every year called Unity Day, and that was a big event held out at Whitehall Park. It was COGF, our local intergroup, and Area 53 and the other area intergroups that put this on every year. And it was a day-long event of leads and lunches and a good fellowship. And all of these things I attended and felt, you know, actually very, very comfortable going to.
Hey, Bill, in those early days there, what was your experience with the Big Book? Were they using the Big Book to take you through steps, or was it being done some other way?
I had to read the Big Book because, number one, when I had this second bottoming out, I joined, following this incident with Thoris at Central Office, I joined a 12 and 12 meeting. So with that, I personally got a lot out of weekly 12 and 12 meeting, which was my home group. I stayed with that meeting for 30 years and feel like I got a lot out of it. The 12 and 12 was a popular meeting format, along with lead meetings and discussion meetings in my early days. You kind of had your pick. Even though lead meetings were the most popular, the other meetings were certainly highly available, and you could go to those anytime you wanted to. It says,
what was the name of that? What was the name of that home group? Did you?
Well, it's still meeting today, I believe. It was the Worthington Step by Step meeting, Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, I believe, and it was incredibly helpful. I've been very lucky. Most of the things I decided to get into and did were very, very effective to me, furthering my service career. One of the things here that it says, how were new members contacted? I do want to say that most of the contact for 12-step work in Central Ohio was done by COGF, our local intergroup. And they had a listing that they used pretty much. They didn't break in a whole lot of new people, but it was always pretty much the same people that made those 12-step calls. And I believe they were very effective. I went on a few, did not have very good luck with my 12-step calls, but it wasn't until I got some sponsorees from my home group that stuck with me. And now most of them have late 20, early 30 years of sobriety, and very grateful for them all. They're the ones that kept me going and kept me active and helped me out in my sobriety, even though I won't tell them this eye to eye, more than I helped them, to be truthful. So I'm very glad for them. They're good friends now to this day after all these years. Almost all of them have stayed sober. Not all. A few have died. So the five or six people, men that I sponsor, I see on a, all except for one, I see on a weekly basis. And it's been a good relationship for me. And I hope they would say the same thing for them. It says, ask for some of the early people in Area 53 General Service. I wanted to mention, just by first name and last initial, it was Melvin B. There was Lowell B. There was Glenn W. There was Donna S. from COGF Central Office. I used them and talked to them frequently as almost like temporary sponsors, but once I got involved in service work, they were very helpful, and I used all of them often. My major service sponsor was Glenn W., who was literally my mentor, my guide through service work, and a friend. And it was very important. He has since passed away, but he was very helpful to me to introduce me to general service, all aspects of it. And he kept me active, in the work that I was to do.
You recall groups being formed? This idea that two drunks in a coffee pot and a resentment were there. You mentioned the formatting, the primary, most popular being lead. But were there, as you were going through that early on, did it seem like there were a lot of groups forming, or were these established groups the standard?
With my knowledge of the groups that I attended, they were pretty well established groups. Not all of them, but they were. They had one of three formats, like I mentioned, at that time, 35 years, 40 years ago, of a lead meetings, number one. Discussion meetings were probably the second most possible. And then 12-step or 12 tradition meetings were probably the third most possible. Most likely. And these groups would form here and there, and some have lasted, some have not. I remember asking Don at Central Office, what can you do to keep groups active and going? And she says, well, she says, the sad part is, it's just like sobriety. Some groups fold up and go away. And she was right at the time, and you still continue to see that to this day. It's too bad, but that's the way that it was. One of the things that was mentioned about what controversies around the 12 traditions can you recall? I do remember one primary controversy, and that was singleness of purpose. That's where there were a couple meetings that were very rigid about following that absolutely, and people that came in and said they were and does drug addicts were criticized and asked not to come back or to not mention it in the AA meetings. And I remember that some of them were offended by this. And I can't tell you if any of them went back out and got drunk or anything like that. It was a difficult pill for them, and that they continued to do the "and does." I have changed my position a little bit on it over the years, and I'm certainly more tolerant of this than some, even though I still have a little bit of singleness of purpose in me and prefer to see that in a meeting, even though I don't make a big deal about it anymore when I can. And another thing it says, how were the groups financed? Were rent or other funding obtained by gambling sessions, bingo sessions? And the answer that I would give to that is no. Most of the groups understood, most of them understood self-support and read the literature and knew that, and this is my opinion too, that gambling and having bingo sessions were not welcomed at the meetings, at least that I went to. Some meetings had the little gambling access, but they had those gamblings before the meeting started, especially with raffles. And that seemed to go okay for them as a meeting, but it was not something that I was ever terribly fond of. It says, please share about the history of AA in your community. Well, I could go on for hours about this, because not only was I a past archivist following my being delegate for Area 53, I was the Area 53 archivist. I was the archivist for our Ohio State get together, which was called the Historian Archivist at the time. And I spent 6 years as the COGF Intergroup Archivist. And so being asked to give an oral history is something that I really appreciate, and I'm very honored to be asked by Steve and the committee. And the answer is yes. Do you know when AA started in your town or area? It was November 3rd, 1941, by the Reverend Floyd Faust, who was the minister of the downtown Disciples of Christ Protestant Church. He had some parishioners that had drinking problems, and he saw in the newspaper about Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was a non-alcoholic clergyman. Tell me this isn't God doing for us that we cannot do for ourselves. But he started this meeting out and had 6 or 8 people attend for the first time in the basement of the YMCA downtown, and was wise enough to understand that this is to be led and only alcoholics were in it. He did not attend himself. And the meeting kept going for many, many years. And this was the first recorded meeting for Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. The growth in AA from that grew fast and well and solidly. And as groups formed and got bigger, Central Office COGF was formed. And that was like the second major entity. Area 53 was formed as an outcropping of the COGF purpose, and pretty much continued based on the program that COGF set up. Let's see what else I have here.
You've been talking a lot about your experience with groups and with the community itself. Do you have anything else that you remember in that area, group-related memories that haven't been covered by the outline? Anything else you want to add before we move on to the service? You started service. I mean, you already mentioned some of your service, but we'll talk a little bit more about that if you got anything else before we move on.
I'm trying to think how much service was done here in that time, and I think it was fairly... I think there was a lot of service done in that time. It was a little bit different. It might not have been as loose as it is today, which I think has happened. I do remember when I came back from the General Service Conference, I remember stating at a DCM meeting, I said, I wish, after I came back from the General Service Conference, I wish that everybody had the chance to go to New York. They would absolutely see, after going through and spending a week in delivering and listening to the AA message, that we're in pretty good hands, that the process works. The General Service Conference is very involved and at times very difficult, but it does work and it does solve the problems of the year that AA has and spends a week in New York to try to smooth out those bumps that we have in the road. So I think I will stop there on that.
You mentioned Glenn as your service sponsor. Is he the one who got you involved in service beyond the group level?
No, he wasn't. What happened at that level was that once I started back into AA after that second bottoming out, and I joined my home group of Worthington 12 and 12, the GSR of that home group threw the keys down in the middle of the table and said, "This is the most frustrating job I've ever had in AA." And he threw the keys down, and without knowing what he was talking about, I raised my hand and I said, "Well, I'll try it. I mean, what do I have to lose, you know?" So I tried it, and it happened to be that the next area assembly that I attended, my first and the next one, was a third legacy or election assembly. And back in those days, when they had their election assemblies, they asked if the groups were not represented by DCMs, that those groups would form in a little circle aside from the election process and elect between them a new DCM. Well, there were three of us, and both of them said no before I did. And I became, at that first assembly, believe it or not, I broke all the rules, but I became the DCM and GSR of that group and continued doing that for a couple years. And ended attending for the first time my area assemblies, which I always did enjoy. Glenn, I actually had somewhat of a first sponsor at the time and had some personality issues there. So Glenn came along. I asked him to be my service sponsor. And like I mentioned, he became mentor, guide, and good friend. And we were together within our general service career for, 20 years maybe. It says here, in what areas of AA service did you devote the greatest time and energy? Well, it says group, district, standing committee, area, delegate, and intergroup. Except for the trustee's position, which I think there's only one person in our area that is a past trustee, I was very, very grateful and honored to have served in all of those areas in one capacity or another. Did I have any experience with the local intergroup? The answer is yes. I came aboard after Steve was intergroup chairperson as well, and picked up where Steve left off and got great direction from him at the time, and stayed then with COGF intergroup for 6 years down at Old Leonard Avenue. And five of those 6 years were very good years for me. This was after I retired, and it was a labor of love job for me, and it didn't pay anything hardly, but it was something I could do, and I worked out to do it, and it was very beneficial to me in my sobriety and in the grounding that I received. I rotated out of the COGF office manager job, and in 2010 I became the COGF archivist. And then I stayed as the archivist for 8 years. So that was my experience with local intergroup offices. And I was very grateful for that. I always felt very honored to have been asked to be in those positions. And it meant a lot to me. And I believe I did a pretty good job with those and was quite grateful for having the opportunity.
Well, I was just going to ask you to talk a little bit about you were the panel 45 delegates. So that was 1995, 1996. And I know that you said you had many of the other positions before that. So can we kind of move to that, your experience as delegate?
Sure. I got a number of stories here. The two major things that we addressed at the General Service Conference in 1996 was that it was a very difficult year. A lot of delegates come back and they say, "Oh, we had a love fest and everybody was wonderful." Well, we didn't. There was a move to censure one of the managers there on the board, and it was hotly debated and discussed at the conference. And eventually, that second year that I was there, it worked itself out and we solved the problem. And it was one of those things where you get 315 passionate alcoholics together. They don't agree on much of anything as a whole, but they did this time. They worked out the problem. The other situation in that 1996 assembly was to approve the concept of the Lavinia Spanish grapevine. And that was a fairly easy decision to make, and one that I've always been kind of proud of doing or being part of, I should say, so that we had a grapevine for our Hispanic community. And that worked itself out very well, too.
What was your conference committee, Bill? What conference committee?
I was on correctional facility, and we passed a couple service items in that committee that eventually got produced into film and corrections to a brochure. And that was, I'll talk about that as long as you brought it up. When I was first assigned to that committee, of all the committees in Alcoholics Anonymous, correctional facilities was the one that I always felt the most steep on. I just didn't understand, was never in jail, had no experience with correctional facilities at all. And so what I did, and this was just a little bit of what I did, is I called the existing correctional facilities together, spearheaded by Dave H., who was on the committee and knowledgeable of correctional work, and asked them to guide me along as the area delegate for anything that came up so that I would have a little bit of knowledge going into the conference about the work that needed to be done or was done by the correctional facilities. So that was very helpful to me. As we all know, that's probably one of the best correctional facilities in the country and most successful. And a lot of the people that are on it have been on it for, I don't know, 30 years maybe. So I was always grateful and very appreciative of them for helping me out a little bit. One of the stories that I like to tell was concerning that censure that was very difficult and that we addressed that year, was that on the way back, coming home after the conference closed, I was in a taxi cab with another past delegate from Michigan. And we were talking about our experience and what we learned. And I remember bringing up at one time, I said, you know, something that's really interesting. I said, as contentious and as passionate and as difficult as dealing with this censure issue, there was not one cuss word on the floor of the conference. There was not one attack from one member to the other on the conference floor. And we resolved the issue, even though spending a lot of time on it. And that's part of what I wish that people could see and understand what kind of atmosphere it was in those times. That if you can imagine, you know, 135 passionate alcoholics being together and discussing a single item, it seems almost impossible, but we did it. And I was always very appreciative of that.
Were you more comfortable, less comfortable with the AA process after having attended a conference? Did you get, you kind of talking, we worked things out, you get more confident in the future as a result of that?
Absolutely. I was one that was just blown away by the love, by the cooperation, by the knowledge. It goes back to direct me, as you've mentioned in your outline, back to the three legacies of AA, it was a remarkable experience for me, and I'm very, very grateful for it. I got another question here I have outlined. Have you had any meaningful experiences sharing your relationship with alcohol with the public? I have. That was early on in my sobriety, where I did do some cooperation with the professional community, lead speaker meeting work, and going to various entities such as the Columbus Key Club meetings and things along those lines, and talking about what AA is and what AA isn't, was something that really helped my knowledge of AA, because I had to do some homework, and I felt compelled to at least understand a little bit of what I was talking about. And it was very good for me. Another question is, what cautions might you have for young AAs today regarding media exposures? And I wrote down, following the guidelines of Area 53, the service manual, and sticking to the singleness of purpose, so that especially outside of AA, they don't get a different opinion of what we do and what we don't do.
So, Bill, you mentioned, you know, your experience at the conference and how it how impressed you were with the members of the conference, which I assume would include the trustees and the staff, as well as the delegates themselves. And I know you've stayed active in Area 53 for the last 20 years after you were the 18 years, whatever it's been, after you were the delegate. Do you think General Service has changed much over that period of time? You've seen continued to watch it. Are there any concerns you have now that you didn't have then?
I was always not quite understanding how to increase the membership of our area assembly meetings. I don't know if this is directly the question, but it goes back to what I feel about it. What I've come to live with is that Area 53 might not be the best area in the country. It might not be the most influential or busy areas in the country. But one of the things I learned from going to the General Service Conference and going to the Ohio State meetings that we all attend was that we're also not the worst either. We're solidly right in the middle. And I can live with that. The people that get elected as officers all seem to do a good job, a commendable job in their positions. And I always felt like they have done a good job. I think we're seeing an increase in area assembly attendance, and I've been happy with it. I still go to the area assemblies when I can, and I enjoy them. You know, you gotta let the new blood come in and take responsibility for these, because that's the way it kind of perpetuates.
All right. Well, Bill, this has been interesting. So as you've thought through this, preparing for this, are there any other issues or any other things you'd like to talk about before we kind of wrap up?
Let me look real quick.
Sure.
Well, I'm glad that at least the committees that we have going today in Area 53 service, not all are functioning terribly well right now, but most of them are. And I'm very encouraged by looking at at the committees that are meeting regular, that are taking care of their financial responsibilities, that we're able to support them financially. I think that that ties right into, once again, the three legacy principle of unity, recovery, and service. I kind of got those backwards: service, recovery, and unity. And it's nice to be able to see that and to report on that. One of the things that was mentioned in my outline here was how are the local businesses and entities and facilities that we service treat and respect AA. In the treatment centers, we had Talbot Hall, we had Riverside Drug and Dependency Unit, we had Parkside, and they were all very supportive of the people that came in and spent their time and their hours and their energy to support those groups in their entities. Within the correctional facilities, I also feel like most of them were very supportive of us going in and taking the message inside to correctional facility meetings. I did that personally for a number of years with George, with Larry, with Herbie, with Richard. I gained so much information from doing that because these guys were really good at it. They were pros. I know they're not supposed to be pros, but man, were they good. And I sat there most of the time just listening to them going, man, they're really excellent at what they do. And they had a pretty good rapport with those people. I think better about recovery from alcoholism than most of the people did in the recovery services of those correctional facilities. Trying to think of anything else that just might take care of.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience here in the area and your story of recovery and with us as well. Obviously, or maybe not obvious to everybody, but it's obvious to me how you talk about people who have been important to the area. You're one of them. You've been active for a while. You remain active, which is always good when past delegates remain active. So I want to tell you, I really appreciate your service to the area and to AA overall. And I'm grateful to have you as a friend.
Thank you, Steve.
So I think that there's nothing else. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. All right, Bill.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you. I feel very honored.